I don't know about you, but I had to read that, and I'm sure I will have to read that several times to begin really appreciating what he's doing. And keep in mind that this is 18, I mean, he's writing this article in 1904, but as we learn in a minute, these experiments, investigations took place in the late 19th century. And the gentleman we're going to quote from in a minute says that there's no question of Nikola's mastery of wireless transmission as early as 1893. I should have gotten the date for him. This. Does he say it? Bear with me. I'm as we as always when I'm stuck in this chair getting blasted. Continuing with Nikola. In the latter part of the same month, I noticed several times that my instruments were affected stronger by discharges taking place at great distances than by those nearby. This puzzled me very much. What was the cause? A number of observations proved that it could not be due to the differences in the intensity of the individual discharges. And I readily ascertained that the phenomenon was not the result of a varying relation between the periods of my receiving circuits and those of the terrestrial disturbances. One night, as I was walking home with an assistant, meditating over these experiences, I was suddenly staggered by a thought. Years ago, when I wrote a chapter of my lecture before the Franklin Institute and the National Electric Light Association, it had presented itself to me, but I had dismissed it as absurd and impossible. I banished it again. Nevertheless, my instinct was aroused, and somehow I felt that I was nearing a great revelation. It was on the 3rd of July, the date I shall never forget, when I obtained the first decisive experimental evidence of a truth of overwhelming importance for the advancement of humanity. A dense mass of strongly charged clouds gathered in the west, and toward the evening a violent storm broke loose, which, after spending much of its fury in the mountains, was driven away with great velocity over the plains. Heavy and long persisting arcs formed almost in regular time intervals. My observations were now greatly facilitated and rendered more accurate by the experiences already gained. I was able to handle my instruments quickly, and I was prepared. The recording apparatus being properly adjusted, its indications became fainter and fainter with the increasing distance of the storm until they ceased altogether. I was watching in eager expectation. Surely enough, in a little while the indications again began, grew stronger and stronger, and after passing through a maximum, gradually decreased and ceased once more. Many times, in regularly recurring intervals, the same actions were repeated until the storm, which, as evident from simple computations, was moving with nearly constant speed, had retreated to a distance of about 300 kilometers or 186 miles. Nor did these strange actions stop then, but continued to manifest themselves with undiminished force. Subsequently, similar observations were also made by my assistant, Mr. Fritz Lowenstein, and shortly afterwards, several admirable opportunities presented themselves, which brought out still more forcibly and unmistakably the true nature of the wonderful phenomenon. No doubt whatever remained. I was observing stationary waves. As the source of disturbances moved away, the receiving circuit became successively under their nodes and loops. Impossible as it seemed, this planet, despite its vast extent, behaved like a conductor of limited dimensions. The tremendous significance of this fact in the transmission of energy by my system had already become quite clear to me. Not only was it practicable to send telegraphic messages to any distance without wires, as I recognized long ago, but also to impress upon the entire globe the faint modulations of the human voice. Far more still, to transmit power in unlimited amounts to any terrestrial distance and almost without any loss. With these stupendous possibilities in sight, with the experimental evidence before me that their realization was henceforth merely a question of expert knowledge, patience, and skill, I attacked vigorously the development of my magnifying transmitter. Now, however, not so much with the original intention of producing one of great power, as with the object of learning how to construct the best one. This is essentially a circuit of very high self-induction and small resistance, which in its arrangement, mode of excitation, and action may be said to be the diametrical opposite of a transmitting circuit typical of telegraphy by Hertzian or electromagnetic radiations. It's difficult to form an adequate idea of the marvelous power of this unique appliance, by the aid of which the globe will be transformed. The electromagnetic radiations being reduced to an insignificant quantity and proper conditions of resonance maintained, the circuit acts like an immense pendulum, storing indefinitely the energy of the primary exciting impulses and impressions upon the earth and its conducting atmosphere, uniform harmonic oscillations of intensities. Let me read that again. Storing indefinitely the energy of the primary exciting impulses and impressions upon the earth and its conducting atmosphere, uniform harmonic oscillations of intensities, which, as actual tests have shown, may be pushed so far as to surpass those attained in the natural displays of static electricity. Simultaneously with these endeavors, the means of individualization and isolation were gradually improved. Great importance was attached to this, for it was found that simple tuning was not sufficient to meet the vigorous practical requirements. The fundamental ideal of employing a number of distinctive elements cooperatively associated for the purpose of isolating energy transmitted, I trace directly to my perusal of Spencer's clear and suggestive exposition of the human nerve mechanism. The influence of this principle on the transmission of intelligence and electrical energy in general cannot as yet be estimated, for the art is still in the embryonic stage. But many thousands of simultaneous telegraphic and telephonic messages through one single conducting channel, natural or artificial, and without serious interference, are certainly practicable, while millions are possible. On the other hand, any desired degree of individualization may be secured by the use of a great number of cooperative elements and arbitrary variation of their distinctive features and order of succession. For obvious reasons, the principle will also be valuable in the extension of the distance of transmission. And that is Nikola Tesla's, an excerpt from Nikola Tesla's The Transmission of Electric Energy Without Wires, which he published in 1904. The theft of Nikola Tesla's research papers and notes, which, when we include within this act under false pretenses gotten, and when we consider Nikola's sudden and increasing secretiveness about his work beginning in the 1920s and continuing thereafter, the theft likely began well before his death in 1943. I mean, these guys, recall, have been self-organized, on the move since the end of the French Revolution. Imagine how they would leap all over something that would give them supreme advantage in weaponry. And clearly, before World War I, It was clear that Nicola had developed such a thing. And believe you me, they would huddle up all, they would cuddle up to this man like you would not believe. And step by step with him, grab whatever he did. They would cook him up a real sweet story of how they were going to bring about the brotherhood of love for all, I'm certain. Nicola, as we were saying, as all folk, as is true of all folk of good heart, takes people at their word. The duplicity of the power, guys, is not something we're equipped to deal with, which is why we need to simply end this system. We have the means. It is time. We have for way too long been playing footsie under the table with these folk, you know, taking them seriously when they are playing us. We should simply, as Prince suggested, turn away from these guys and turn to what we want, what we want. And in order to determine what that is globally, we need time to plan it. We absolutely need a one-day global general strike. We need to experience what freedom feels like. And then plan the next one until we're done. Until this system is done and our freedom is won. So these guys jumped all over him well and all over his work well before 1943. Their behavior today is not something they just happened upon. They have been doing behaving this way for quite some time. But when he died, all his remaining papers were removed from his apartment, disappeared, we may be certain, into the hands of the Global Statesman. This theft meant his work could not be replicated outside of the research laboratories, as far as I'm aware, of the Global State. Margaret Cheney writes, quote, "The eminent Yugoslav physicist Dr. Aleksandar Marinčić points out that today, when we have proof of the Earth's resonant modes and know that certain waves can propagate with so little attenuation that standing waves can be set up in the Earth ionosphere system, we can judge how right Tesla was when he said that the mechanism of electromagnetic wave propagation in his system was not the same as Hertz's system with collimated radiation. In his introduction to Tesla's Colorado Spring Notes, Dr. Marinčić observes that the scientist could not, that is, Nikola, could not, however, have known that the phenomena he was talking about would only become pronounced at very low frequencies." And he surmises that future study of Tesla's writings will reveal some interesting details of his ideas in this field, unquote. The diary especially throws light on his part in the development of radio, and there's no longer a question of his mastery of wireless transmission as early as 1893. And that's actually, I quoted that earlier, that is the quote from Margaret Cheney from her book, Man Out of Time. Next week, we'll continue this excerpt.